Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, February 27th. I'm Ray Graff. If you're in the market for a new home or you plan on selling yours, we have two real estate pros in the studio to help answer your questions. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your call. Hey, you could call them. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. If you have a real estate question for our professionals, you can also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. That's the website, and the number is 800-348-2551. Renata, Alex, and you coming up right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Real Estate Today. We welcome back Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate. He specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. And Renata Lewis from Keller Williams Capital District. She leads the Renata V. Lewis team, and they have an undefeated record. She's a go-to source for real estate industry and advice. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program as we roll along here at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org for the emails, and 800-348-2551. Alexander Monticello, it's been a while. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
How's Happy the winter treating you?
It's good. We're almost to spring.
Thank goodness. You know, I'm optimistic.
Let's not put lip before cup here because, you know, March is the cruelest month.
A teaser for sure.
Yeah. And so, Renata Lewis, how are you doing?
I'm fabulous.
You know, we were talking before the show, and the last month, the weather was awful. I mean, as far as I grew up around here, it was one of the worst. Between late January and a couple days ago, it was pretty bad. And Renata, you said it was pretty crazy trying to show houses in this weather.
Yeah. So, you know, we had some frozen lockboxes, couldn't get into the keys, lots of broken nails.
Broken nails?
Yeah,
you mean fingernails?
Yeah, my fingernails. So
can you write that off?
Not really, no. Okay. You know, just unshoveled driveways, and not that they didn't want to, but it was just hard,
yeah.
Right? Everything was frozen, so a little bit more challenging during the wintertime for sure.
How's the inventory looking?
It's still low.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that odd?
No,
it's been low for so long.
Seasonally, it's low, and then we're still catching up from the years behind.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in their house who don't want to move, and for good reason, because rates are higher, prices are higher, and moving is a real pain in the butt.
I was thinking about that the other night, how lucky we were. Like, usually, most things I do in the course of my life, the timing is awful, but we refinanced at the perfect time, and I'm looking at the interest rates going, oh, yeah, that was good for a change. That was good timing. do we have any inkling of some movement there?
I mean, I think recently they fell a little bit, but, I mean, we're projecting them to pretty much stay where they are. I mean, unless some big changes happen in the political world or just the industry itself. You know, I we talked about this last time. I mean, 5.5 to 6% is pretty much the average over the span of the many years that we've been tracking the interest rate. So, you know, affordability just needs to be budgeted based on what that interest rate is. And again, if the rates come down, there's always the option of refinancing. So if somebody's out there really looking for a house and needs a home, it's definitely still a great time to purchase. And you know, you're building equity, and, you know, as far as the rents, I just had, you know, first-time home buyers close on a beautiful home, and their mortgage was about, I think it was like $480 less than what they were paying for rent. So they were very excited.
That is exciting. But, I mean, we had talked at some points when the economy was really kind of not doing very well about how young people are maybe not getting shut out of that first home, Alex, but it was tougher. Are we seeing any movement there?
You know, I just saw the latest statistics from January. This is a national statistic, but 29% or 1 in 3 buyers are cash buyers.
Amazing.
Of homes. And we're seeing that locally, too. So it's hard. There's it's a very competitive market. The people who are in the home buying process need to have really good, strong financial position. And a lot of sellers can be rather picky on who they accept for offers.
Yeah.
But I mean, I want to also piggyback on that. Like, don't be discouraged if you're out there in the market right now, because there's a right house out there and a right seller that's willing to work with you. For instance, I just was able to secure a home for my VA buyers. They were 100% financing, and they had a contingency to close on their current home. So when I sat down with them, I'm like, this is going to be tremendously challenging.
The contingency meaning?
They have to sell their current home. They're relocating from another area in order to purchase a home here. And mainly the VA guidelines stipulate that they can't have two primary residents under a VA loan. So the good news is they've already have a buyer on standby on their home. So as soon as they found a home here, we can coordinate the closings. But we were fortunate enough where we were able to find a seller who was also in a similar position where they need a contingency to find a home of choice.
Do you find that person just via serendipity, or do you have a network where you say, okay, this is a fit?
No, I mean, it was disclosed that that was the seller's wishes. And, you know, we just presented a, you know, a strong offer and with a strong explanation of what's happening. And it just happened to be the perfect fit.
Nice.
So don't get discouraged, right? I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition, and there's a good chance these guys, they lost, you know, one other offer before. But there's a good chance that you could lose 3, 4, 5 offers. But sometimes you do find that perfect storm where you can really make it happen.
That is so discouraging, though, losing offers.
Yeah, it's hard. It's definitely expectations that we set with our buyers today.
Yeah, to that point, there's a... for those buyers out there who are in the market, who are about to go under contract or may have just gone under contract, there are some special grant programs available.
Yes.
Specific grant programs called the Home Buyer Dream Program that local banks here in this area are providing. I don't know if I can name them or not.
If you name two or three, we can probably get away with it. But
yeah,
otherwise,
so I can name two or three.
Yeah.
So Broadview, Capcom, CEFQ,
so
Sunmark.
The credit unions.
And M&T,
yes.
M&T Bank.
Okay.
They've got to be local lenders. They have grant programs ranging from $10,000 to $20,000 in grant money for first-time home buyers. The catch is it goes pretty quickly. So there's... You know, I think Sunmark has 25 of these applications left and Broadview has 40. So they will probably be extinguished in the next few weeks. But that's essentially free money for first-time home buyers. There are some clawbacks if you move out of the house within, I think it's a 5-year period.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, a couple of emails here, then we'll take a break, and then we'll move on. 800-348-2551. If you have a real estate question for Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello, the email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Andrew wrote in, my elderly parents are preparing to sell their home. They're art lovers and covered as much of the walls as possible with art. I have removed hundreds, not exaggerating, of wall anchors and made the necessary repairs for preparing the walls for new paint. Should I go ahead and paint with contractor white prior to viewing, or make it understood that any prospective buyer would have the option of choosing their preference of colors included in the sale price of the home? What are the pros and cons of either option? Are there any other options you might use in negotiations for this type of situation? It's a pretty nice seller. I'm going to paint the place for you.
You know, I'm of the opinion I would pick a neutral color. It doesn't, not necessarily contractor white, but take a neutral color and paint the house. You know, it's always, you know, the idea of providing a credit to do work can be harder for buyers to envision what that's going to look like. So unless you have a really good interior designer who's going to give you some pretty unique colors that you think are going to be sellable, the easiest thing is a neutral color that will appeal to the broadest audience.
Yeah. Renata, you agree?
I do agree. Yep. And I first impressions are everything. And leaving that option for the buyers, and, you know, we could even get into financing issues. You know, is it going to be a credit? Is it going to be something that we need to write in as addendum? When is it going to happen? You know, the liability of somebody breaking something, or so it's just easier to get it done. It's going to look presentable. It's going to be ready, and it's going to showcase beautifully.
So in other words, don't do this, oh, I'm going to offer to paint it for
no,
you.
No, just get it done.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see. This email from Catherine, also about painting. My house in Niskayuna is almost 100 years old. I've lived there for 36 years. It's in great shape. Through the years, I've gotten replacement windows, air conditioning, finished the basement. Last year, I put a new boiler in. My question is, the house is just about in need of painting. I painted it 3 times since I've lived here, and it was done really well with great paint. If I want to sell it in the next couple of years, is it worth it for me to pay for a new paint job?
Are we talking about the exterior of the house?
I think so, but yeah. It doesn't say.
I'm thinking the exterior of the house. So, I mean, I guess it depends on what condition it is in. If there's a lot of peeling paint, you probably would want to invest in either repainting the entire thing or at least spot paint it. Peeling paint, mortgage lenders don't like. Even conventional has given us a little bit of a hard time with that recently. So,
Hang on. So the mortgage lenders don't like the peeling paint. They're getting this information. Presumably, Mr. Mooney, the banker, is not coming in and looking through these houses. So this is based upon the inspection?
It's going to be based upon the appraisal, which is different from an inspection. So you as a buyer, you are protected with your bank, with an appraiser who comes in and evaluates the home to make sure that you are not overpaying for the home. And if the appraiser goes in there and doesn't like some of the things, depending on the guidelines of the mortgage financing that you're working with, it could become an issue.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's better to a fresh coat of paint can help. Somebody once said that paint has the best ROI in real estate.
Ah,
I tend to agree.
Okay, Let's take a break here. It's Real Estate with Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello. The number is 800-348-2551. We'll get to your phone calls and also emails if you want to do that. It's VoxPop at WAMC.org. We'll be back. Zach Malloy on the drums there. 800-348-2551. No, it's not true. It's Vox Pop. WAMC is the place. And if you want to email us, voxpop@wamc.org. 800-348-2551. We were just chatting in the break a little bit about the proper pricing of homes and how if you do it wrong, even a nice house can sit on the market for too long.
Correct. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think pricing is there's an art and a science behind it, right? And if you have a typical home that's of similar condition to your neighbor's home, it can be easy to comp, right? If it's a unique home or there's some different features, it can be more challenging.
So the comp is the science. Where's the art, Renata?
So the art is really just being very cautious about how you're comparing it to others, right? So the art would be, you know, is your kitchen as nice as the other kitchen, right? You have to be very specific. So a lot, I believe what I'm hearing in some of, you know, my conversation is, you know, well, my neighbor sold for XYZ. And, you know, the sellers tend to always think that their house is better, and in some cases it is. But let's really break it down to what did your kitchen look like compared to the other kitchen? What did your living room look like? You know, the improvements, the age of the major mechanicals. So all of that is a factor of here's our baseline and how are we going to adjust it based on your individual unique features of your home.
Yeah, I imagine this is a delicate conversation to have with a seller.
Yeah, I think it's a challenge, but I think what's important is to give as much data and information to the seller as possible, right? Most sellers have a higher opinion of their house,
right?
And
yeah.
It's natural. We all do.
I don't, but still.
The idea, though, is, right, if you're talking to three different realtors, you'll get three different set of data and points. But the best example is what are the current homes on the market like and how they compare to your home, and what are the current sales? How do they compare to your home? I think those data points are the best. The hardest is when you have a contemporary home or a more modern home that's harder to comp. That's where it gets more challenging.
Right, right. And I think what's important, too, is I forget what I was going to say now.
That's okay. Fair enough. All right, we're going to go to the phones in a minute. 800-348-2551. Regarding the pricing of homes and homes that maybe are priced too high and they sit on the market,
It just came back.
Oh, good for
so
you. Taking some of those brain helpers?
I don't know. It's the winter fog. I can't stand it.
I gotcha.
So what I was going to say is that in this market, even though it is a strong seller's market, you can absolutely overprice your home, right?
Right.
And in this market, because it's a strong seller's market, you almost can't underprice it, right? The market is like, you know, natural water. It's going to find its natural price, or you know what the buyers are willing to pay. So really just having a strong conversation, it's like, you know, let's not try it too high, because we're going to miss the mark. And if we miss the mark, then we're going to get into price adjustments. And at that point, you know, hopefully we still get enough traction to get a really great offer. But let's not make that mistake, because the buyers are extremely discriminating right now. They've seen a ton of houses. They've lost a lot of offers. And they will be the ones that will dictate what they want to pay for your home.
This is so interesting. So, and you don't have to mention any names, but when a newbie enters your ranks, you've both been at this game a long time, is it a common beginner mistake to price things too high?
Not necessarily, right? I mean, there's another, if you pull back the curtain on this, and I've said this for a while, if you're a listing agent and you're going on a listing appointment, it can be easier to get a listing by giving a higher number.
You're buying the listing sometimes, right?
But even if you know in your heart of hearts that it's over,
You should be a fiduciary, right?
But this is a common sales strategy, right? You go in, you know the seller wants to hear a higher number. You have a better chance of getting the seller to sign your paper, and then you worry about beating up the seller and adjusting the price later.
All right, okay.
But so every home seller out there, right, should listen carefully to the justification and reasoning that the agent is giving for the price. Even if you agree with the number, right?
Right.
Ask and try to understand what's the basis that they're using.
All right. Catherine and Newberg, hang in there one more minute. If the home is priced too highly, in the old days, or not the old days, a few years ago, COVID and just past COVID, when houses were going in a matter of moments, if a house doesn't go, How long can it stay on the market, Renata, before there's a little sort of something in the back of your head goes off and says, well, something may be wrong here?
You know, I gauge it on the average days on the market in the specific area, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty unique to different areas, different school districts, communities, you know, wherever you are. You know, but if the average days on the market in a specific area is 10 days, which we're seeing quite a bit of that still, right? If we're on the market for 3 weeks, we're off on price. Right.
Yeah.
It's either we're off, even if, you know, sometimes it's condition, a lot of times it's condition or the way it shows, but ultimately it's the price.
Yeah.
You know, I always refer to, hey, I can sell a house in the middle of a Long Island expressway as long as it's priced correctly. So really the strategy is, you know, how are we going to prepare the home for sale? You know, how much is that going to bump the price or show better? And let's look at the price range that we should be in order to position the home on the market to really get the most exposure and get you the best price.
Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello join us today. It's Real Estate. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Newberg. Catherine, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I just had a quick question. I sold two houses back in 2022 and 2023. And my question is pertaining to the Burnett versus the National Association of Realtors, I guess it's the lawsuit that was settled back in August of last year.
Yes.
So my question is, do you have any idea how the payout to the sellers is calculated?
All right, we have to tread very lightly on this,
ah.
And only because we're not really supposed to talk about commissions. We have two different brokers in-house, and that's something that we're not allowed to discuss. But bottom line is, you know, what that presented was just being completely transparent on the option of the buyer or the seller choosing whether or not they want to collaborate and offer a fee to the buyer agent. Whereas in the old days, the listing included the buyer agent fee with the listing. So the buyer agent or whoever was bringing in the buyer knew that they were making X amount of money. Now that kind of split that option, and which it always did. You always had the option of how much you wanted to offer to the buyer's agent, but it was all kind of calculated into one piece. Now when a listing is taken, that piece is really discussed separately. How much are you willing to pay for my services as a listing agent? And would you be open to offering anything to somebody that brings the buyer?
Uh-huh. Alex, you've been making faces.
Well,
what's going on?
No, I'm actually intrigued by the question. Catherine, have you opted into the class? Have you already opted?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think if you...
So she's talking about getting... Go ahead.
So if you've opted into the class, I think reaching out to the plaintiff's attorney, they should be able to give you a better formula. But I am aware, I believe the attorneys in that case just got their attorney fees approved, right? Which is about one third of the settlement.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And so do you know how many members are in that class? Because you could also just
divide it. Certain on mine, no.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a few thousand dollars. I don't know if it's in the neighborhood of 5,000 or 8,000. That was the number I heard a while back, but that may have been pre-attorney fees.
Okay. So. Catherine, thank you very much for the call. So
wait
a minute. If you
totally misunderstood that. Go
if
ahead.
You two having a couple few martinis and you're not on the air, you're just hanging out, you can't speak about your commissions to each other in
no.
a private setting?
No.
Well, come on. You must have a good idea what his commission is, and he probably has a good idea what your commission is.
It's true. It's just something that, you know, it shouldn't be discussed, and they don't want anybody commingling and, you know, setting some type of a precedent that's what we're all going to be doing.
So you can't hang at all with the realtors?
Well, of course I can. We just can't talk about that. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, with the services that I charge are going to be very different from the services that Alex may charge. And it's also going to depend on what I'm dealing with. Right. There's homes that need a ton of work. There is probates that I help that need a lot of, you know, pieces to come together before it could even be marketed. So it really depends on how much information, how much guidance, what we're doing. And then ultimately, you know, if there is an option or them being open to offering anything to somebody that's bringing in the offer.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. You have nothing more to say on this?
No.
Code of silence. Omerta, as they say. All right, let's go to Robert in Rotterdam. Robert.
You're up.
Here.
Hello. You're on.
Hello.
Yep.
You hear me?
Go, Daddy, go.
Yep. Okay. Question is, all right, here's the deal. We had a big house out in Duanesburg. Time to downsize. We bought a house. They accepted our offer. In Rotterdam. Yep. And 2 weeks before the closing, I'm looking for a recourse. Can they do this? The sellers of the house we bought that accepted our offer basically backed out of the deal. And we're living in an apartment and we sold our house.
So,
is that right?
Robert, they probably cannot do that. Do you have an attorney?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, it's a powerful attorney in Rotterdam.
Yeah. So generally the way these contracts work is when the standard contract we use in our market, and it's fairly common in most markets, it is that, you know, the buyer has a few contingencies that they can invoke to cancel the contract, such as if there's an inspection issue or if they're unable to secure financing. But once those contingencies are satisfied, there's no generally contingency for the seller to cancel the contract unless they have put in a seller contingency that stipulates that, you know, they need to find their own home, for example.
That's a common seller contingency. They accept their higher offer.
Right. Did they have a seller contingency in there, such as the requirement that they needed to find their own home?
No, they wanted to get out, but then they came back and said to accept their higher offer. So my realtor basically said he was basically blown away that they did it.
Well, were they still in attorney approval?
I don't know.
Yeah, so the one period that Renata's referencing is the attorney approval period, which is usually 3 to 5 business days, and either party can cancel the contract for any reason during that period.
Mm-hmm. So that might have been that window.
So if you were in that window, then or if that attorney review period didn't get closed, this happens. And I had a deal where that window was held open for like 2 weeks accidentally. And so you want to make sure those windows get closed make sure they can't take the house away from you.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot. So what is attorney review? What are they doing?
So attorney review is it's typically 3 business days. And, you know, we're signing a lot of binding contracts and legal documents, and no one's an attorney, or even if they are, they may not practice real estate. So basically it's a 3 business day window. Even though we have an agreement, it's executed contracts, everything is ready to go. It has to go to the prospective client's attorney for attorney review. That's when the attorney reviews the entire contract with them, goes over, you know, make sure that they understand what they're signing. And then once a stamp of approval from each attorney, it happens, then we are technically in a binding contract. And then the attorney approval is lifted, meaning now we have to purchase the home and they have to sell the home.
So that's a drop dead date at that point.
For that, of course, like, who are you, Alex?
Alex,
You want a like cup of Alex coffee or had something? Mentioned that the buyers have some contingencies such as mortgage, inspections, appraisal, title. So a lot of ways to potentially for the buyer to get out of the contract, but not necessarily the seller.
So the 3-day period is done. All the attorneys are happy. They've gotten their billable hours. Everything's cool. Now, after that, if I'm selling a home and it's already done, and some Saudi prince comes in and says, I want to give you $2 million for your house, which went on the market for $300,000. You can't do it. You are locked in.
Correct. There is a common contingency called a 48-hour contingency that the seller may ask for. If the buyer who's buying the house says, I want to buy your house, but I got to sell my house first, the seller may say, okay, fine, I'll take that deal, but I'm going to put this 48-hour contingency, which stipulates I can continue to show it.
Oh.
And if that Saudi prince comes along with $2 million in cash,
yeah,
I come back to you and you have 48 hours to remove your contingency.
Or beat or match that
buyer.
Oh,
that's so interesting.
And if you don't remove that contingency, I then can cancel the contract and take this other offer.
So when things were super hot, smoking hot, COVID, pandemic and post-pandemic hot, was that a common thing, the 48-hour contingency?
No. In fact, that contingency is almost never used now because a seller would rather take a straight-up offer that's not contingent on a buyer selling their house, right? And
right.
The seller can be picky.
Okay.
So it only comes into play when the seller feels that they need to work with this buyer.
Okay. Let's go back to our phone lines. Renata Lewis and Alex Monticello are here. It's Real Estate on Vox Pop. Renee is in Campbell Hall. Renee, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Good.
I was just curious. I'm probably going to put my house on the market in about 5 years, but I'm also environmentally friendly. I missed out at the beginning of the show, so maybe somebody has already asked this question. I have to redo my roof. I'm coming up to 25 years on the house. So now they're offering to redo your roof and also put on solar. But I do have a quite expensive house, and I'm just curious as to whether or not solar benefits, certainly benefits the environment. Will it make? And I'm thinking it'll make the house more sellable, but other people told me that very rich people don't like solar on the roof.
Huh. Well, that's an interesting thing to hear. I don't know. Do you guys agree with that?
So I guess the one thing that buyers don't like when they do see a solar is when it's a leased solar. So if you're going to buy it outright, it definitely adds value to the house, right? And as far as the community or, you know, whoever the buyer may be, I think it's really a personal choice. You know, like you seem to be environmentally friendly. And if it's a big house, it may actually help with some of the utilities. I think maybe positioning of the solar panels may also impact, you know, what the property looks like. So maybe if they were in the back of the property versus the beautiful front, you know, that could be a little bit more appealing. But my biggest thing is, you know, if you do it, you know, pay for them outright. You know, it's the right way to do it this way. It's not technically an encumbrance that is being, or a lease that the buyers have to take on and, you know, worry about it. Cause those leases a lot of times are not written very well.
How about ground mounted units instead of on the ceiling? I mean, instead of on the roof.
Yeah. That's what Renato was saying. I mean, ground mounted, right. If you have a big enough lot and you can hide them, that might be more appealing. I think you also want to look at the payback period, right? How much do they cost? What kind of incentives are there and what the payback period is? I will say, I mean, my sense is solar is going to become even more popular because there are more electric vehicles and even plug-in hybrids, right? So as we're seeing that develop, there's a companion.
We got to hit a break here. And Renee, thanks for the call. If I were to, and I believe me, this is a conversation we have in my house every time the weather gets bad. I say, I want one of those generators. Do they add value to the house?
I think they do, especially in an environment, you know, where we get such bad weathers.
Yeah. Will you tell my wife? Will you give her a call?
I sure will.
Because, you know, all right, Zach, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. Danny Gatton, a beautiful take on the Simpsons theme here on Vox Pop. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. 800-348-2551. Alex Monticello of Monticello Real Estate is here. And Renata Lewis from Keller Williams Capital District and the Renata V. Lewis team are here to answer your questions. And before we get back to the phones, a couple emails have come in. This is from Fern Fran. Oh, it's Fern. Okay. I think I might have called her Fran once, but it's actually Fern. How do you expect the upcoming New York State rental registry for houses with lead paint to affect investment in houses used for rentals?
That's a great question. I'm not aware of the New York State registry. Are you aware?
Me neither. Okay. I know commercial, you know, as far as commercial, they have to remediate it and take care of it. As far as residential, I'm not too familiar with that.
I mean, there's already laws and disclosures on the books for lead paint.
Right.
And if you hire a painter, they will tell you they'll have to test for lead paint prior to doing any mitigation.
Yeah. That must cost a lot, the mitigation.
It does, yeah, depending on what type of work is getting done. So, you know, sometimes in these older homes, I live in Albany. I work with a lot of buyers who are looking in the city of Albany. And oftentimes if a client is concerned about lead paint, you know, the solution is to look for a home that was built after 1979 because, you know, especially the homes that are 100 plus years old, we can guarantee you there is lead paint in the house.
Right.
And if to remove it can be almost more disruptive and more problematic than to encapsulate it and paint over it.
This is from Anne. If the house is in good shape with new roof, newer furnace, bathrooms, etc., but needs siding, should you bother or let a buyer choose the color?
Again, it goes back to the same conversation as far as painting the outside of the house. Yeah. I think curb appeal is very important, right? A lot of buyers start their process online, then they actually drive by. So if they drive by and, you know, the house doesn't look great, you know, they may have concerns.
Okay. Number here is 800-348-2551. Real estate on the program today with Renata and Alex, and we'll go to Clifton Park. Jennifer, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Absolutely love the show.
Thank you.
My question is, I'm looking to sell my home in the near future. It's a desirable location, but the home needs work structurally, specifically the basement, interior, stairs. The problem was the home was inspected in 96. I'm sorry. Yes, 96, from a corporate seller. We bought it with the assumption that the inspection was clean and, you know, they were reputable. Apparently, they were not, because as we've been living in the home, we found things like the basement stairs and the up going up towards the second floor. The stairs are not structurally sound. You know, in other words, there's cracks in the middle. You can see the basement through the stairs. Also, when you're in the basement, you can look outside and see, you know, when the insulation has come off, you can see outside. So my question, I guess, is do I leave the home as is and try to sell it that way, or should I have these things repaired? And there's probably no recourse because of the year that it is and the year that I purchased. What's your thought on any of that?
It's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge. I think you, so on the legal recourse, although we can't give legal advice, I think your assumption is probably fairly accurate. But if you wanted to double check, you could certainly talk to your attorney who helped with the transaction. As far as getting the home ready for selling, you know, you might want to call a foundation or basement expert to give you a better sense of what the problem entails and how to potentially improve it. I always tell my clients, if something is obviously broken, you're better off fixing it rather than trying to sell the house, because you're going to probably end up the buyer is going to penalize you probably more, you know, for than the actual cost of the repair.
Now,
go ahead.
If the inspector comes in, say Jennifer sells, puts the house on the market, and there are these structural issues, that would be basically a red flag for an inspector. If the inspector says, yeah, this is no good, you're not going to be able to sell the house anyway, will you, Renata?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So, you know, I agree with Alex, getting a professional in there to take a look, just to give you an idea whether or not it truly is structurally, you know, sound or not. It may be structurally sound, but it may just not look cosmetically nice,
yeah.
Right? Obviously, in the basement, you want to patch up any holes because you don't want any mice or anything coming in, and it's just a draft or water coming in and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I do the same thing. Like, let's try to fix anything that we think that we have the budget for. And if there isn't a budget, figure out what the issue is and then disclose it such that the sellers or the buyers can make, you know, clear decisions on what they're purchasing, and you're not going to have any default during an inspection or negotiate any more money at that time.
Jennifer.
Okay. Now, how is it that they could have done this with, I mean, in other words, if you pull the insulation out of the basement, you can physically look outside and see the light and the ground. So how was it that they were able to do this, you know, just assuming we wouldn't look under the insulation?
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to see, you know, what it is. And how old is the house? How was the house built?
The house was built. It was built in 93. The builders are no longer in business shortly after we purchased the home in 96. They're no longer building, and I can guess why.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, you know, your expertise, if we should actually try to sell it and just say, okay, if the house is 350, can we just sell it for three, and then just walk away and leave it as is? So what have you ever experienced anything like that, or
Yeah, I mean, yes, a lot of times, right? But again, I think getting a pro in there just to evaluate and give us an idea of what it is, because the worst case scenario is you're going to try to sell it and the buyers are still going to have an inspection. And even though that may be, you know, you're selling it as is, if that inspection reveals a major defect, they're going to have the right to cancel the contract. So you don't want to put yourself in a position where you're losing buyers not knowing what the issue may be.
Right. Yeah, because it's in a very desirable location. It's on like 3/4 of an acre. It's got a lot of privacy in the back, and it's a real quiet, friendly street. Okay. So I guess the answer is just to have it checked out and see how much we're looking at to repair it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Get
Jennifer,
it checked
thank
out.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it very much. Now, you know, the inspector, Jennifer, thankfully mentioned no names of the construction or the inspector, but inspectors generally have pretty good ethics, right?
They have to. They should. And, you know, whether or not how it was missed, you know, we're not there, so we don't know.
Yeah.
And again, the house is now older, you know, right? It's when they bought it. So did it get worse during the time that they were living there? I don't know. I mean, but, typically I find that, you know, inspectors can't go into walls. They can't move things. So, you know, an inspector is there seeing what they could actually see. And a lot of times, you know, if issues come up, it's because they weren't able to move insulation and or walls to see that there was an issue with the build out or whatever the case may be.
My theory is there's good inspectors and there's bad inspectors.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. No, I mean, but everybody makes mistakes, right?
Right.
So that's another layer.
You know, Jennifer said that you can see the light outside of the basement. I mean, the basement's underground, so I think there might be something else at play here.
In the inspector's defense, right? But perhaps they would have, if they did a more thorough inspection, they would have seen it. It's also been 30 years,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, we've lived there for 30 years. Have things shifted? Have things moved?
Yeah.
You know, did they put in a granite kitchen that could have, you know, affected the structure of the way? So who knows?
Right. Michael in Albany writes, and then we'll go back to the phones. My house is currently listed with the city as a 2,900 square foot single family, but it is actually a two family residence. What would be the effect of correcting this with the assessor's office on my taxes? I can only imagine.
So it sounds like it's listed as a single family,
right,
but it's
20,
an actual two family?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I don't know if he's living there. I don't think it will change the tax rate at all. It will still be a homestead tax rate, whether it's a one family or two family.
Right.
So if it changes, what could change is the square footage. If the city has a larger or smaller square footage size or number of bedrooms or bathrooms, that could impact the assessment.
And depending when it was assessed, right, you don't want to reassess it to the current prices because it will probably go up.
Except City of Albany just reassessed.
We don't
That's
know.
Right,
he didn't
did.
Say what
yeah.
city, though,
yeah.
did he?
Did he say Albany?
He said the city, but who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, let's go back to the phones here. David is in Clifton Park. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, you know. What's up?
Good to hear. I've got a marketability question about a rental unit. So I own an up-down duplex in the Voorheesville-Altamont area. The downstairs unit is handicap accessible. It's a two-bedroom, one-bath with an additional in-law suite that's essentially a studio apartment with a kitchenette, a walk-in closet, and a full bathroom. So my question is, the next time we list this unit for rent, are we better off keeping the in-law suite as is and marketing it to people who have elderly family members or who have like a live-in caregiver? Or do you think we'd be better off removing the kitchenette and then turning the in-law suite into a master bedroom with an ensuite bath and just turning it into a three-bedroom, two-bath apartment with a master bedroom and ensuite bath?
I vote option two.
Why, Renata?
Because it's a rental, right? So, and I think the rental amount that you are going to be able to ask for will tremendously increase with an ensuite and an extra bathroom. You know, people that are renting, they're spending a lot of money in rent, and for whatever situation that they're in the rental option, they still want nice things. And I feel, you know, any investor I talk to, you know, if you want to maximize on the rental option, you know, make it amazing. you know, offer the extra bathroom. The ensuite is very desirable, especially in the area that you're, you know, talking about. I think that would be the best return on the investment. Alex is looking at me. And,
I agree. Yeah. No, I agree.
All right. At least we're in agreement.
Woo-hoo. Okay.
I don't think there is as many options for a rental option with you know, a huge extended family, but I may be wrong. You know, I believe the need for an extended family as far as homes is out there right now because it's expensive for senior homes, et cetera. But that's just my opinion.
Alex.
I agree.
Wow.
Yeah.
David, you want to follow up?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm a little surprised that you both agree that it's better to just rip out the kitchenette. You don't think that there's a market for folks who have like a live-in caregiver or something like that, or there's just a bigger market for folks that want an ensuite bathroom than folks who want an in-law suite?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, most of the renters were, I'll be honest. I don't do a lot of rentals, so I'll qualify that. But I'm not sure.
I mean, even if you have an extended family member, the more bedrooms you have, the more bathrooms you have, they make it work, right? I don't think you need to be specific to an in-law or an extra accessory apartment.
All right, David, we'll move on from there. Thanks for the call. We'll go to Schoharie here in the waning moments. Carl, you're on. Hello, Carl.
Hey, how you doing?
Good
show.
Thanks.
My question is, I like to sell the house, but I like to sell it as is. Is there anything I should know?
Yeah, so we get this question a lot, and my initial suggestion is not to do it.
Really?
You know, and here, let me give you, again, buyers are going to assume the worst. So the minute you use that phrase as is, it can be a red flag. And so I guess I would take a step back and first encourage you to evaluate the house with a couple different professionals and figure out, are there a significant number of problems that, you know, would lead somebody to say, okay, we need to just present this as an as is? Or is the house in actually good shape, has good bones, and you're just don't want to haggle and negotiate after inspection issues? What's the situation with your house?
Well, it's in fairly good condition. The presentation is not great.
So
I'm sure it needs painting, and but the roof is less than 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So
and
I
the
think
structure is pretty good.
You might be selling yourself short by going as is, and I would.
Is there a technical line that you cross when you say as is, or is it just sort of in the eye of the beholder?
No, I think it's in the eye of the beholder, but in the negotiation phase, if you were to go under contract and say, okay, I'm going to agree to your price, but this price is as is, meaning I'm not going to give another penny. You can do an inspection, but I'm not giving anything up.
Okay.
So that's how I've typically seen the as is used.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, maybe I wouldn't use the as is phrase, but, you know, price it accordingly, right? If it's just cosmetic, right? You have a good bones, you have a great house. You know, if it's worth, if it's worth $300 and you want to, you know, go in at $250 or $260, the buyers will know why you're reducing the price point based on the cosmetic condition of the home and let them evaluate what their worth is. And, you know, listen, it's a inventory short. Somebody may give you more money for it just because they want to get into a home and have a roof over their head.
Yeah.
And the final point, just to loop back, is sometimes also if you have the ability to clear out the house and just throw a fresh coat of paint on it, clean it, and it can have a very different presentation.
You know, getting back to Jennifer's question, the one with the seeing the daylight out of the cellar, which I still can't figure out, if she stipulated cash buyers only, then there no inspection necessary, right?
Yeah, but you're limiting the buyer pool tremendously by saying cash buyers only. You know, as Alex pointed out, 29% of the sales were cash buyers, so you're losing out on the other, you know, what, 71%.
Very nice. Oh, the math skills are between the two of you. That's wonderful. All right, Alex, how do people find you online?
You can just Google Monticello Real Estate or Alex Monticello.
All right, fair enough. Renata Lewis?
Yeah, just either Renata Lewis or at Renata's Homes.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.
Very good. Hey, both of you, thanks a lot. We muddled through it. We're all a little in slow motion at times today, but we did it.
We did it.
Support comes from We Clean Heat Pumps, working to protect air quality in homes and businesses as winter heating season is here. WeCleanHeatPumps.com. And the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio, presenting sound and vision, music at the movies, screening the 1980s Xanadu with Olivia Newton-John, ELO, and Gene Kelly. Presumably, none of them will be there. Preceded by a conversation on the film and music. It's March 4th at the Linda. Go to WAMC.org. You'll find out all kinds of exciting stuff. All right, that's it. Thanks again to Alex Monticello and Renata Lewis for being here. Thanks for listening. Great calls. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who is our engineer. Susie Checkey screened the calls. Thanks, Susie. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we eat healthy with Holly Shelowitz. We'll see you at 2:00.